For those listening on the podcast, I'm getting old. I reviewed for 10 minutes and forgot to turn it on, so forgive me. It's, what, August 7th, 2021, and we're on page 4, Bill's story. So we're getting to the point in October 1929, hell broke loose. Now, what happened in the stock market in 1929, and I explained this on Wednesday, most people don't know this, but you could buy 100 shares of General Electric stock for $100, let's say. And then with that $100, you could use that money to buy 100 shares of RCA or Kodak or whatever was Bethlehem Steel. So then you had $200 worth of stock, and you could use that $200 to buy $200 of something else. So they could buy on margin or whatever they called it. You didn't have to actually have the money to buy the stock. You could use your stocks and their value. So when the value of the stocks went down, you were screwed because you couldn't match, you didn't have any money to match the price. So now they have rules. And they have things, and they have stops when the computers start to drive everything down, and they have people who have to buy it when it goes down, and this and that. And so we can't have that, but you can still lose a lot of money in the stock market. But in this day, they lost everything. And you can do it today. You can buy, you can speculate on futures and all that, but most people don't. So people are jumping out of windows. You heard all about that. And it was really a big deal, and it started the Depression. Because you know why? The banks ran out of money. Now, we have an FDIC and $100,000 insured and all that. But they didn't have that. And the banks were buying stock. And people took all their money out of the banks. There was a run on the banks, and there was no money. So people lost everything. And then since the companies had lost all this money, there were no jobs. And it was bad. We think things are bad now with COVID. People couldn't work. They had no money. There was no unemployment. There was no assistance. And that went on for years. And we started to recover in the 30s after FDR got elected. But we really didn't recover till the war. And that's when we geared up all of our production. Everybody went to work, and things started to get back better. But FDR started this program where we built roads and highways and dams, and people went to work. And, but this is where, so he's lost a lot of money. And he says, my friends had dropped several million since 10 o'clock. So what? Tomorrow's another day. Does that sound like us? Let's get a drink. It's a bad day today, right? Things go, but, and here's a great sentence. As he drank, look what alcohol did to him. It gave me that old fierce determination to serve God and others. No, doesn't say that. To win. He's got the determination now with booze to win and to come back. He's going to show him. And then he talks about he went to Montreal. He found somebody to help him. And by spring, he was living in his accustomed style. He felt like Napoleon returning from Elba. Now, Napoleon came back from Elba, and then he led France again, but then he eventually went to St. Helena. He said, no St. Helena for me, but it happened to him, right? I looked up St. Helena. It wasn't that bad. He lived in a big mansion and all, but he was, that's where he was sent. But guess what happened? Drinking caught up with me again. Alcohol will catch up with you. Anybody doesn't believe that, keep drinking. Caught up with him. What does it mean? It caught up with him. He was overwhelmed, and he couldn't stop, and he stayed broke. And now he went to live with his wife's parents. He found the job. Now, I can't imagine this happens to anybody in AA today, but he lost the job because he had a brawl with a taxi driver. I mean, anybody ever get upset in AA? I must admit, I got upset last night. You know, I want you to know I'm not perfect. I went and I got the chlorine and the tabs and the charcoal. And I told the guy, do you have the tabs? I've got them. And he put it on the trunk. I didn't open it up till 5 hours later, and the tabs weren't there. A son of a bee. Oh my God, let's get the gun out and shoot that guy. So I felt that way for about 30 seconds. Has anybody ever done that? Then I made a big mistake. I called him. 30 days. So I called him and he wasn't available. I said, well, you know what he did? He didn't put the thing in there. And gee, that really, really, really upsets me. And I said, well, he's busy. So I said, well, I don't want to talk to anybody. I hung up. So then I felt bad and I had to practice amends, so I had to call him back and say, I'm sorry, I was irritable on the phone and I'll pick it up next week. Now, why didn't I just say, gee, he forgot to put it in the thing, see? That would have saved me 30 seconds of executing and a few minutes of being disturbed and being irritable on the phone. But I'm a human being. But I knew I made amends, and then I let it go, and I went on with my life. And so that we have to watch for that all the time. And I share that because we get it. Now, that's unusual for me nowadays. I don't do that very much. But I really wanted to test that water. Why? Because I wanted it to look good. Because then I was afraid the neighbors would think, my water's no good. And then Michael's no good. You see how it works? Just because he didn't put the thing in the car. All right, probably you stopped listening now. I'm so crazy, but anyway, he stayed broke. And he got in a brawl with the taxi driver. Mercifully, he had no real employment for 5 years or hardly drew a sober breath. This is not a guy who had a bad day. This is a guy who was dying. His wife's working, and he's drinking all day, every day. Now, he was a relatively young man when Ebby comes to see him in 34. I think he was 37 years old. So he did this for about 5 years of really, really bad drinking. She would come home exhausted and find me drunk. She's working and he's drinking. I became an unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places. They didn't want to see him. Now here's another great description of us. Liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. Once you cross that line, you're done. You've crossed that invisible line. When liquor ceases to be a luxury, it becomes a necessity. You've lost the power of choice completely. And you only live to drink. And when you drink, you can't control how much you drink. And you are headed to an alcoholic death. You see that? And I know a lot of people come to AA have crossed that line, but a lot of them, you can't get them to see it. They can't see that they're not bad, that bad yet. Bathtub gin, 2 bottles a day and often 3 got to be routine. Sometimes a small deal would net a few $100s and I would pay my bills at the bar and restaurant. This went on endlessly and I began to wake in early in the morning shaking violently. He is really, really ill. He's getting withdrawal every morning. A tumbler full of gin followed by 6 bottles of beer will be required to eat breakfast. Just to eat. Nevertheless, this should be the theme song. I still thought I could control the situation. You see how crazy we are? Have you met people like that? Maybe I was like that at one time. Probably. We still thought we could control it. We can't stop drinking. We can't even eat till we drink. And yet we still thought we could control it. And where does the disease center? In our minds. And his mind still thought it could control it. Now, who was his thinker? Who told him that? He did, his ego, this thinker. And remember, you're supposed to ask your thinker when it talks to you, what's your source of information? So when he thought he could control the situation, he should have said, well, where did you get that information from? I can't control it. And you see, that's when you work the steps, you can see the truth. So when I thought about yesterday, I was so upset, I realized, well, that was just so silly. It's just being silly. You know, and I stopped right away. Because, you know, somebody was telling me I should be upset. I didn't have to be upset. And so it's rare, it's very rare nowadays that I get like that. But, you know, I had my 2 or 3 minutes, so there you go. But here's the thing. There were periods of sobriety which renewed my wife's hope. And why do you think he got sober? Probably couldn't drink anymore. I've seen that. People just can't drink anymore physically, and they withdraw, and then they sober up for a while. But they still have what? The spiritual what?
Malady.
They're still separated from God. They still want to be the big shot and be important, and they don't feel okay just being Bill. So what happened? Things got worse. What a shock. The house was taken over. Mother-in-law died. My wife and father-in-law became ill. His wife actually had a miscarriage. It's very sad. He was drunk when she went to the hospital. She found them, I think he didn't go, he was drunk. I don't know if he was passed out. Then he got a promising business opportunity. Stocks were at the low point of 32, and I had somehow formed a group to buy. I was to share generously in the profits. You see, it's going to be a big shot again. Then I went on a prodigious bender, and that chance vanished. He couldn't stay sober. He couldn't even stay sober to get to the meeting. Now, the doctor talks about that, how men would make the supreme sacrifice because of this phenomena of craving and the obsession of the mind. I woke up. This had to be stopped. Anybody believe him? Sure. Anybody do that? I saw I could not take as much as one drink, so he could see that. One drink was going to kill him. It had to be stopped. I was through forever, so here comes the solemn oath. Anybody here do the solemn oath? Anybody do it and believe it? Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. So here's, and you know, when I would say that, I would believe it. Anybody else say it? I'm done. And so I believe him, and he would pass the FBI lie detector test. Bill's okay. But guess what? We don't have the power. That's the thing that a lot of people come to AA don't understand. Self-knowledge is not going to fix this. Knowing you can't take one drink isn't going to fix it. Deciding you're not going to drink is not going to fix it because you don't have any power. And he's telling us that in this story. That's the point of this, to tell us about alcoholism. And then, so that we can see our alcoholism. So he came home drunk. Anybody take an oath not to drink and drink that day? Anybody drink within hours? Yeah, there you go. Where had been my high resolve? Willpower. Jeff knows why willpower doesn't work. We went through it. Willpower won't work because right before you drink, you can only think about what it's going to do for you, not to you. And the book hammers that home. Page 24, at certain times, we cannot recall the humiliation defeat of even a moment ago. We're not defense. Page 43, no human power can relieve this. We have no defense against the first drink. Anybody believe that? If you don't believe it, keep drinking. Now, do I have the power not to drink today? No. But I have chosen to seek the power that gives me the power not to drink. That's the big thing I have to remember. I can't fix myself. I don't have the power today, but I have the power to seek God, and I've done it. I prayed this morning. I listened to scripture. I've asked God to take care of me today and to do His will, and so I have a power that I'm seeking, and if I do that and keep seeking Him, I won't drink. Isn't that what the book says? I simply didn't know. I hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way and I'd taken it. I've heard that a lot. I just went out with a bunch of people and they gave me a drink. And I said, well, yeah, I can have one. Was I crazy? On the cruise ship, I still remember, they had the little toast. Everybody's dressed up in the tuxedos. It's kind of a fancy cruise. And there were 8 people there and they were all ritzy witsy. And so they go, well, you could certainly have a little. It was a real little thing. I don't even know what it was. Probably something good, but it wouldn't be enough, of course. So I said, no, I can't drink this because there's not enough booze on the ship. So they gave me some really strange looks. They kind of moved their chairs away. You know how that is. But I was serious. I said, you know, I'm allergic to alcohol. I can't drink this. And I didn't care what they thought. A lot of times people would say, you don't drink. I said, no, don't drink. So that was fine. You don't have to explain yourself. It's nobody's business. Was I crazy? Of course he was crazy. I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. So guess what he did? Because Bill's a good man. He's a good man. He's just an alcoholic. Renewing my resolve. He's going to get stronger. I tried again. Maybe we should have like a exercise program for willpower against alcohol and call it like a group therapy. We'd probably charge money for it. But it's not going to work, right? It's like intensive therapy. Let's have intensive therapy. Confidence began to replace by cocksureness. Now I need intensive therapy. I need the intensive prayer, meditation, inventory, seeking God all the time. It says we have to be intense about it because alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful, remember? And we just have a daily reprieve. And it says I have to be in fit spiritual condition. Remember, half spiritual condition won't work, right? Half measures won't work. So he became cocksuredness. He was good. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. That's a mistake too. That's why I ask people how you let God do it. We shouldn't take credit even for our sobriety, except for we're doing the actions that God wants us to do. But God's the one that causes the result. But I have to take the actions. I have a part in it. But it's God that does it. Now I had what it takes. So he went into a cafe to telephone. And guess what? He's beating on the bar. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time. He didn't say, no, this is a bad idea. You get it? He's already, once you get that obsession in your mind, you're doomed. Without God. Now, I could think about it today, but immediately it would be replaced by the idea, well, you know, that's a ridiculous idea. Isn't that good? And that's what it means to be recovered. Not that you're immune, but that when you get the thought of alcohol, you recoil from it as if from a hot flame, because God will say, bad idea. I would manage better next time, but I might as well get drunk. And then the remorse, horror, and hopelessness of the next morning are unforgettable. We can all relate to that, can't we? The courage to do battle. Now he doesn't have the courage to do battle anymore. And he had a terrible sense of impending calamity, that terrible fear. I remember how much fear I had 19 years ago, more than 19, almost 20 years ago. Impending calamity. Not just fear, but impending calamity. He didn't dare cross the street because he was afraid he'd get run down. He got a dozen glasses of ale, and that stilled his nerves. A morning paper told me the market had gone to hell. Well, so had I. The market would recover, but I wouldn't. That was a hard thought. Should I kill myself? No, not now. Then a mental fog settled down. Gin would fix that. Two bottles, not one bottle, not one drink, and oblivion. He wanted oblivion because then he didn't have to face the fear, the anxiety, the truth of his situation. He went on for two more years. Can you imagine? And then this next paragraph, he taught about how they went to the country, they moved, they did all that. Then one night he was so afraid he was going to jump out the window, he brought the mattress down to the first floor. And then a doctor came and gave him a sedative. So the next day he drank the gin and the sedative. That landed him on the rocks. You know what's your drug of choice, really? Anything that's on the floor in front of you. That's what Mickey B said. I like that. Everybody's talking about their drug of choice. Anything that'll change reality is my drug of choice, really, when I'm in a separated from God and I'm in that jumping off place. Does anybody else think that that's true too? And then you may get back to your favorite drug of choice, but you start with something to change the way you feel, and you're headed down that road to doom. So then he was 40 pounds underweight on page 7. And he's a thin guy. If you ever saw Bill W. picture, he was a thin man. Then his brother-in-law put him in the hospital, town's hospital. Then they gave him Belladonna and they gave him water therapy, I think. They would spray water on you. I don't know what that did, but... And then mild exercise. But here's, he meets Dr. Silkworth. I met a kind doctor, explained that though certainly selfish and foolish, very selfish, I had been seriously ill, bodily with the allergy of the body, mentally with the obsession of the mind, and that he lived irritable, restless, and discontent, and he would seek the ease and comfort of alcohol. It relieved me somewhat to learn that the will is amazingly weakened, so he could understand that it wasn't just he was weak, it was because he had no power when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. So here he's getting knowledge, he's getting like treatment. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. He had a desperate desire to stop, but he would still drink. Understanding myself now, here's a great one. I fared forth because he understood himself. And for 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly, even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. Now, what is the answer? God knowledge. Knowledge of God working in your life, trust in relying on God, living on a different basis, where God is the center of your world, not you. But it wasn't, self-knowledge wasn't the answer. The frightful day came when I drank once more. The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. It's amazing how quickly we can go down. After a time I returned to the hospital, this was the end. He felt it. His wife was informed that he would die of heart failure during delirium tremens or a wet brain. That's what happened in those days. People drank to the end. Still do, but we don't see a lot of wet brains come to AA. They just don't make it here. But people still get it. And people get heart failure. People die in DTs, but we have good drugs now. They didn't have any treatment then for DTs. They had some phenobarbital maybe and some Belladonna, but they didn't have the medicines we have now. And so they didn't need to tell me. And so I knew and almost welcomed the idea. And so there's this scene, and My Name is Bill W., where his wife and Dr. Silkworth is talking outside the room about how he's doomed, and he's lying in the bed listening. And it's almost like, I'm telling the patient's family the cancer's progressed and it's spread, and we have no treatment for it. Patient's lying in the bed. But I never really said it like that. But. You know, he could see that the end. It was a devastating blow to his pride. His pride was what was killing him. He had excessive false pride, false sense of self. That's what drove him. Why? Because he had low self-esteem. Because he didn't feel good about himself. He had to be the big shot and had excessive pride. When we have excessive pride, we're always threatened, right? We get angry all the time. You know, how could the guy not put the strips in my car? You know, doesn't he know I'm Michael the Magnificent? I mean, I just laugh at myself. But I want to tell you, you know, I talk about that, but I don't like to be disturbed. I don't like to be disturbed. I don't like to feel that way. I dread it. And even though it was a very, very short time, I saw it and I said, you know, it's always there. Our disease is always there waiting. I had thought so well of myself, well, that was great, and my abilities and my capacity to surmount obstacles, and I'm cornered at last. So who is the cause of our problems? Me. And who do we have to fire? Me. Because I was the wrong manager. I needed God. Now I was to plunge into the dark, joining the endless procession of sots. I thought of my wife. What do I would not give to make amends, but that was over now. Now I'm going to end with this, because this is, I think, the best description of hitting bottom, of what it means to be completely defeated. No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Anybody getting that bitter morass of self-pity? I was so wonderful. I tried so hard. Didn't they understand me? Look what happened. How did I get in this situation? Blah, 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 blah. But it was all because of me, right? I made decisions based on self that caused me to be harmed and harmed others. The root of my problem was selfishness, self-centeredness. I was an extreme example of self-will run riot. I caused all the problems. I got myself here, nobody else. Quicksand, God actually got me here. Without God helping me see the truth of my situation, I wouldn't have given up that day. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. Quicksand is not good, by the way. We have a lot of young people here. They don't remember the old Tarzan movie. You know, the people carrying the boxes, you know, and Jane and Tarzan are walking in, running away from the bad natives and the bad guy, and the poor guy falls in the quicksand, and then you see the hand just slithering down. I don't know. I was 8. I used to enjoy those scenes. I don't know. Something wrong with me. Quicksand. All right, stop it. There are people listening. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. Now think about that. You're in this swamp of self-pity, in the swamp, and then there's quicksand all around. You can't go anywhere. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. Now there's a key thing here. It wasn't that he decided one day he had had enough. No. He found himself in a swamp of self-pity. He found himself surrounded by quicksand. He saw that he was overwhelmed. Alcohol was a master. It wasn't a voluntary thing. Bill didn't wake up one day and say, I'm going to quit drinking, go to AA. No. He was completely surrendered. And this is the thing most people don't realize. If I choose to surrender voluntarily, then I can choose to drink again. But if I'm completely surrendered by God, then I have a power to help me do what I need to do. Because if I choose, well, I've had enough of alcohol and I'm going to go to AA and the wife left me and I got fired and I'm going to get better, I could choose to drink again. But if you're completely defeated and you keep that moment of defeat alive, that's what Father Lee, if I can always remember how bad it was. When I meet with a new guy, I say, well, when was the worst moment you've had? Write it down. Write down the date. And remember that, because that will drive you to seek God and do the work. And if you forget how bad it was, if he forgets that he was quicksand surrounded him, if he forget that alcohol was his master, If he doesn't keep that alive, then he'll drink again. That's why meetings are important, because everybody said they're an alcoholic here, right? And hopefully, reading this, you remember your moment of complete defeat. And Father Leo says the reason you go to AA is to keep that moment of defeat alive so you don't repeat it. And if you keep that moment, that first step, that's why they say you have to work the first step perfectly all the time. Because if you get away from that, then you'll say it wasn't that bad, you know, and this and that. I don't need to go to that meeting, listen to him talk all the time, blah, 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 blah. And it's just the thinker telling you bad things. And so I'm going to stop there. And I hope this was helpful. These are really powerful pages. And I still remember that moment, how bad it was. And maybe people could talk about how alcohol brought them to their knees and about how they stay in touch with their first step and how they relate to Bill and his drive. And it didn't, no matter how great his willpower or how great his abilities were, he couldn't overcome alcohol. And remember, he couldn't overcome a liquid in a bottle. Think about it. It's a liquid in a bottle. So I'll stop there and we'll open it up. Thank you very much.